Hello, you're listening to The Sower, a podcast of the Ciceronian Society. The Ciceronian Society equips and encourages Christian scholars to serve the church as the center of cultural and civic renewal. To learn more about us, our events, our journal, Pietas, to sign up for our newsletter and make your tax-deductible gift, please go to ciceroniansociety.org. We have a very busy year ahead, so definitely stay tuned. We got our fall symposium this October. It'll be actually specifically be October 22nd through the 24th, 2026, in Holland, Michigan, and the program for that will be out soon. Having just read through the proposals this morning, I'm really, really excited to share that larger program with you. Our 2027 Spring Conference will be at Regent University in Virginia Beach, March 11th through the 13th, and the proposals for that are due September 1st, 2026. We'll also be launching the Logress Institute for Classical Studies this fall. We have the Herbert Storing Prize. The nominations for that are due September 1st, so please take a look at all that. I'm Josh Bowman, Executive Director of the Ciceronian Society, and before we go any further, I'd like to open with a prayer. Heavenly Father, we ask that in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, you would bless this conversation and guide us by your Holy Spirit. May all we say and do bring glory and honor to you. Amen. Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Dr. Simon Tarr, who serves as the Dean of both the Honors College as well as the School of Communication and the Arts at Regent University. So it sounds like he decided he's just not going to sleep anymore. His background, though, is actually in the art of film. And his films and performances have screened on every continent, even in Antarctica, which is crazy, in film festivals. And with the orchestras and the theater, also go back to Sower episode 29 to learn more about the Antarctica trip. He co-holds a patent in virtual reality technology and has served on many boards of directors, including as president of the University Film and Video Foundation. Tarr earned a PhD in information science from the University of South Carolina and an MFA in film production from Ohio University. The Regent Honors College has also been an enthusiastic sponsor of our last three conferences, including the most recent one in Omaha. So it makes sense that we'd plan to visit there next, or at least to go to their campus next spring for our annual academic conference, March 11th through the 13th, 2027, at their beautiful campus in Virginia Beach. Enjoy the show. Simon, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here on Rogan's podcast. I really wait. Oh no.
Nope, that'll be something different.
I called into the wrong show.
You called in the wrong show, and while I do live in Michigan, I am not high. Welcome to the Ciceronian Society. Well, I want to start, Simon, by just thanking you and Regent Honors College for once again sponsoring our conference this past spring in Omaha, which is always such an encouragement. I just wondered, how was your time in Omaha? What'd you think of it?
Omaha was my third Ciceronian. And
I think so, yeah.
And each one is more fun and engaging than the last. It's just such a great conference. I learned so much. I'm overwhelmed every time by just the breadth of things. I was just thinking about the AI panel that was at the last one and how much I got out of that. In particular, the one I think it was Jeff Bristol, who mm-hmm. his paper on the myth of Narcissus and how he sort of saw AI and modern large language models as a mm-hmm. fulfillment of Narcissus, that really changed how I think about engaging with language models in a really helpful way. So I just get a lot of practical intellectual engagement out of Ciceronian, so I appreciated it.
Yeah, those kind of topics are great. None of this podcast is brought to you by AI, by the way. In our community, that's very important. We joke that someday we're gonna release our own AI, and we're gonna call it Cataline, just as a joke. But no, that's not nope. That fell flat. Nerd jokes. Okay. But I'm glad you were there. We always have lots of fun. Glad to have Regent folks there. But I'm wondering, why would an honors college or a place like Regent as a whole decide to willingly share your time and resources with a group like the Ciceronian Society? I'm just curious, what goes through your mind when you think this is worth it?
Well, our honors college at Regent is pretty young. It's new. I'm the inaugural dean of our honors college. And as we were trying to grow and figure out where we wanted to connect, it was natural for me to ask the faculty what they thought about that. And two prominent members of the Ciceronian Society, Joel Iliff and Jacob Wolf, who at the time was on faculty here at Regent, just immediately said, you got to be at Ciceronian. We have to. And I had never heard of it. I hadn't been there before. And so we started participating as a sponsor. And the more time that I personally spent there, and we would bring faculty and even students recently, it just became clear that there was so much forward motion intellectually going on there that it was just the room that we wanted to continually be in. And the more time we spent there, this really led to us wanting to host here at Virginia Beach, just because the kind of thinking and the kind of thinkers that are engaging at Ciceronian are the type of folks that we want our students to be exposed to. They're the type of people I would love to have filling the halls at Regent as faculty. It's just exact people like us do things like this. To paraphrase. I forgot who I'm even paraphrasing. I'll have to look that up.
It's a little early in the morning.
But it's just such a natural fit every time we go back. Even though it's a relatively small conference, it punches above its weight intellectually.
Yeah. It's a great vibe, as Bill McClay said when we were there.
Yes.
Did you get stuck in the snowstorm mess?
Well, I did. I did not. And my faculty will point out that I abandoned them. I actually left a day early because I had to turn around and go to another conference in Kansas City like 2 days from then. And if I had gotten stuck there, I would have lost that entire conference. So I abandoned my entire team who stayed in Omaha for extra days and had a great time, I might add. So, but they never missed an opportunity to point out that I left them there. So
you're not going to hear the end of that one. Now, this is an important question for our listeners. If we're in Virginia Beach, March 11th through 13th next year, I mean, are we going to have to face a epic snow and ice storm?
It is really unpredictable. Coastal Virginia, I guess it's possible. It's improbable that we will hit the kind of ginormous blizzard that hit the Midwest. But it's our spring break at the beach. I wouldn't get in the ocean in March, but it'll be pretty. But you never know. It could be 80 degrees. It could be chilly and rainy. You never know. That's why you gotta come and place your bets.
That's right.
We have Kalshi odds on the weather. It's gonna be great.
Well, all right. Well, I want to turn to focus more on Regent University, on the honors program, and just your experience at a Christian college. The Ciceronian Society is intended to be a group of Christian scholars who take their faith and scholarship seriously. But we both know that is not the default description many people would offer for evangelical Christians, especially. And so a place like Regent, of course, is going to be naturally and justifiably affiliated with evangelicals. And so just to kind of play devil's advocate here, is Regent just an indoctrination station for the Republican Party? Right? What this is?
Yes.
Why should someone take an evangelical university seriously? Yeah.
Well, I really like Karen Swallow Pryor's definition of evangelical, because it's, you know, there's the, you know, in the vernacular, when friends who knew me before I came to Christ think of me as an evangelical, I think that they might think that I changed into a very different person, because now I have this weird term affixed to me, evangelical. When there's in the common parlance, that means obviously everyone is Pentecostal, obviously, and everyone votes for whatever President Trump wants, no matter what, and everybody it assumes that there's this laundry list of things that come along with being evangelical, and it's just not true. But that's not what the popular media tends to describe us as. What's really interesting at Regent, interesting to me, is that it's non-denominational, and by non-denominational, it doesn't mean automatically big box church. We have so many Roman Catholic faculty and quite a few Orthodox faculty and every flavor of Protestant that you can imagine. And all of the, it feels a lot like Ciceronian, in that you have really hard-hitting intellectuals of every flavor of believing Christian, sort of teasing each other on the nuances of their particular denomination. And it's quite a bit of fun. And the students see this, and the students see the faculty engaging with each other in this way. And they engage with that too. We have a lot of Catholic students. We have students who become Catholic. We have students who become Protestant. I'm not sure that everybody's parents would be excited about this, but it does happen as people are exploring their faiths and learning about different aspects of ways that you can believe. So the politics doesn't actually come into it very much, which you would be surprised. I mean, do we have a turning point chapter? Sure, everybody does, and they're great. They're very engaged and very smart students. We have a really strong government school and a really strong law school, and we have fantastic people doing filing amicus briefs for the Supreme Court, and we have a Professor Aaron Hawley, who is a really big part of a lot of important work going on recently from our law school. And so it's is there a conservative inclination politically? Yeah, absolutely. But it's not in the charter of the university or anything. So it's we get that a lot, I think, but not as much as when, for example, our founding chancellor was Pat Robertson, and he ran for president, and he was a very visible voice in that world. But that's not the university, though.
Well, it kind of related to that, just thinking of Pat Robertson, just of evangelicalism. There was a recent podcast with Carl Truman and Ed Stetzer. I only listened to the clip. I need to listen to the whole thing at some point. And Carl makes the distinction between Big Eva and Gig Eva. Like, so Big Eva, Big Evangelicalism, right, as he calls it. And Big Evangelicalism is essentially a complex of evangelical marketing and branding. It's more of a business strategy and disposition, not so much a genuine theological tradition, if you will. Now we both know that evangelicalism can appeal to a particular theological tradition, but it's not what Carl's referring to. It doesn't do that. And so it's intellectually shallow and superficial, easily manipulated. And that might be a whole different discussion. But I thought about his phrase, new phrase, Gig Eva, which is essentially the online culture of evangelical influencers who, without any credentials or experience, impact the theological and moral formation of who knows how many people, especially young people. We see this, of course, it's happening among Catholics and Orthodox as well, but I'm just thinking in the Regent space. But I'm wondering how, especially in this world that you're teaching in and being an administrator in, there's this malformation or lack of formation Christian in terms of Christian spirituality, not just intellectually, but also Christian teaching. For students who show up on Regent's campus, I think in part because of this Gig Eva vibe, if you will. I could be wrong. But to what extent are places like Regent engaged in remedial Christianity 101? Does that make sense? I mean, in the sense that there's like, I mean, we assume, hey, they come to a Christian campus, they're Christian. Well, Are they? And do they even know what it means? I mean, where do you see that dynamic play out at Region?
Ooh, that's big. That there's a lot in that.
Yeah.
Now, Dr. Truman's thoughts on Big Eva, I think, were also, I think, part of his talking about his new book. And I haven't read his new book.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah.
So I don't want to ascribe to Dr. Truman, who I admire, things that he isn't saying. I have to push back a little on the Gig Eva thing, though, I have to say. I mean, when Dr. Truman came up with the term Big Eva, I don't know when he came up with it, maybe 15 years ago. He was describing something interesting that I think was accurate. I'm not sure what he's describing now is accurate, because when he wrote about that in First Things, which is, again, just a small essay, I think he was not being specific, because I think he didn't want to name names potentially, but I think that he's missing quite a bit there, because his thought is that, you know, Gig Eva is doomed because the so-called Gig Eva is doomed partially because it doesn't have the reach or the impact that Big Eva does. I don't think that's true. I think that Big Eva has pretty much humiliated itself by failing to respond and to important things that have happened in the culture, starting probably with COVID, and is probably directly responsible for Gig Eva, or people who are these, for lack of a better word, influencers. But I think there's a baby in the bathwater thing. There's this sense when Dr. Truman is talking about not just Gig Eva, but how, again, this is just in a podcast. I haven't read the whole book, so please don't come at me. but there is this, when he's talking about The Desecration of Man, his new book, and he gives, you know, examples of technology, and the most common one that he uses, what he uses that is a very common criticism, is, oh, look around and all the kids have their faces in their phones. And that's, I think, a very facile criticism of an important technology, and dismisses the fact that there are some really amazing evangelical and dare I say pastoral work going on in that influencer space. Are there folks who are celebrities who aren't accountable, which is his main criticism, people who are not accountable, who can say whatever they want and no one's going to hold them up to it? Yes, there are people like that. But there is also, you know, institutions that bootstrapped themselves, like Theos U. And Nathan Finocchio and his group is really just incredibly intellectual, incredibly rigorous, and that group is, I think it's mostly Pentecostal, in its theology, and it's definitely charismatic, but it's like Netflix for seminary. From this very specific perspective, and the work is brilliant. It's rigorous, and all of those people are discipled. They are under authority, and they are incredibly good communicators using this technology. And I don't think it's now that might not be what he's describing, but they're in that same space, and they kind of get it all gets lumped together as online pastorship. And I think that it's a lot more complex than that.
Let's maybe make it a little more complex and this goes in some ways in your wheelhouse of film and aesthetic formation, things like that, where even if you have theologically rigorous people doing this, you know, regardless of the denomination. I agree with you. There are some really, really good things going on online. And there's also some really bad things going on. You know, do they always know how to discern? But also, is there something about the medium and the message, right? The whole Marshall McLuhan, Neil Postman kind of line of thinking here. Is there something lost when a lot of this theological and personal formation is done through a smartphone or through a computer or through Netflix? You know, you know, because I think there's something to be said about, well, yeah, you're going to get some really good content here, but there's a communal aspect, the aspect of give and take. I mean,
right.
In a way, is that is if our primary means of formation coming into college in particular is digital, does that hamstring the student's ability to succeed?
So are you, just to be clear, are you saying, I just want to make sure I understand, are you saying that you see the gig Eva phenomenon as being related somehow to online education, online college? Is that sort of what you're saying?
Yes.
It's an interesting idea.
Because there is, on the one hand, a lot of this technology isn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, here at Ciceronian Society, we're going to be using the Logos Institute and we're going to be using Zoom or some other digital technology to facilitate conversations online. And so I think, you know, as much as we all would love in-person education, we think it's better. The reality is just, in terms of affordability and accessibility, we're going to have to stick with it. Now, what I'm saying is that because let me step back a little bit. So I think of when I entered college in 2004, you know, there were smartphones, but most of us didn't have them, I think. You know, we certainly had computers, but I had experience reading physical textbooks, writing physical papers, and engaging in education primarily in a face-to-face context or reading or a text-based thing. By the time the students I used to teach or when my kids go off to school, if they do, there will be, you know, a lot of their education. Well, my kids are homeschooled, but a lot of their generation's education had been facilitated through a screen,
right?
Is there something, and the same is true with a lot of their Christian formation. A lot of kids are going to church online, right? Mm. Or, you know, they didn't go to Sunday school. They just listened to this podcast. I'm just wondering if that is, though not intended to do harm, is it creating challenges or opportunities in higher education from your perspective? Does that make more sense?
Yes. So this, ladies and gentlemen, this is a 6-hour podcast. So so buckle up.
Go get a snack. Pause. take a potty break.
So, okay, this is great. And let's see if we can tie it to your original question of formation and malformation. Mm-hmm. Are there opportunities and liabilities? 100%. Yes. All of the above. And what's, these are amazing technologies. The fact that you and I are doing this right now over Zoom and then, recording them locally so that we have the higher quality is, perhaps a clumsy metaphor, but we're able to have this conversation over Zoom because of this, you know, disembodied technology. But because we're both professionals, we're also using high quality recording materials embodied in our local spaces so that the quality is sufficient to the task at hand. I think maybe, what if it's kind of like that, right? I think, you know, learning management systems like Blackboard and Canvas, giant breaches, data breaches notwithstanding, are really brilliant technologies that that also make me want to put my fist through a window. So they make lots of things available, and I'm not sure how much of it is learning, right? Like they manage something. And they make it possible to have these online courses. The question is an interesting economic one. I'm not really clear what the ultimate economic opportunity is for having large numbers of online students. It's definitely an opportunity. I have taught online classes. It was wonderful to be able to pray with a single mom in Chicago in a class that I was teaching as she had her, you know, two kids on her lap taking this class. That was amazing. Is it really, how infinitely scalable is it? I'm not sure, but that economic driver is part of why it persists so much. And I think that I find that the students on campus at Regent in particular are acutely aware of two things. One is that it's very convenient to take some courses online, even when they're an on-campus student. And that the other is that they would prefer an on-campus experience because that is the best possible premium intellectual experience to connect with their professors. Both are true. And the wisest students that I've seen have figured out a way to surf it and get a bunch of both. Mm-hmm. But I wonder about the malformation question. So the online learning, online discipling, can you be discipled online? Anything's possible. There is some really great online teaching out there. I don't think it's discipling unless you individually connect with people. But
I think there can be, you know, I might scoff at the idea of discipling online, but at the same time, we always hear about they were radicalized online, kind of that kind of idea,
right?
So just separate from religion, you can become it, right? You can become a disciple of something that's not Christian in a way.
Right. Okay. So there are lots of dark examples. There are lots of dark examples of, That is an interesting point. Oh, that's a good question. Can you actually be radicalized online? That is worth exploring. That's interesting. Your original question about formation, lack of formation, for students everywhere, not just at Regent, but at any Christian school. An interesting thing about Regent is that it is definitely and unapologetically a Christian institution. And the motto for the university is Christian leadership to change the world. It is not, and it was specifically chosen not to be Christian leaders to change the world. Because early on in Regent's development, it was clear that they wanted to be open to people who were not Christian or not yet Christian, because it's just a good university, it's a good, strong university with strong programs that happens to also shine this light into the world. And that if you are not a believer, you will come here and you'll get a great education. And you don't have to believe yourself, but you have to agree that you're going to get a lot of it. And, you know, the faculty aren't going to make affordances for you not wanting to study scripture in relationship to filmmaking or whatever it is you're studying. So is there a lack of formation? Oh, yes. And this is where on-campus experience becomes very important in beyond the classroom, especially with campus ministries and student affairs, where at secular universities, they do the same thing. Like student affairs at a giant, a Big Ten school or my last school, an SEC school. They are also discipling students. That's part of the process. The question is discipling them into what and in what way and by what standard. It's very difficult to have that in an online environment, which is not what you were asking, but that formation is at a school like Regent that doesn't have a denominational association means that we have to be very careful, and the students and their parents are putting a lot of trust in us to not mess that up. That we're going to honor Scripture, and we're going to honor the Nicene Creed, right? And we're going to honor, you know, these important things. But we are a charismatic institution. You know, even though we are not strictly speaking, any particular denomination, but that doesn't mean that you can't be Orthodox and get a great education or be a great faculty member who is, you know, tenured and promoted and leads here. Which just means there's a lot of conversation. Now, that's not lack of formation. Although if someone whose child is Eastern Orthodox and starts dabbling in Southern Baptist thinking, then that's, you know, they might think of that as malformation, but it's a conversation, and that it's just as likely that would happen just going out on your own and not going to college. To bring it back to what we were originally talking about, this is why mission alignment of the faculty at a high intellectual level is the most important thing that we do. Who we hire as faculty, how we retain them. These are the most important contacts of the students. And that's why we take so long and are so deliberate about hiring, and why we want to connect with organizations like Ciceronian, because that is the well that we believe that we should be drawing from for the kind of intellectual water that we're giving to these students. So, wow, how do you like that?
That's a good answer. The mission alignment, I think, is really important, and I think others have seen Ciceronian Society as a resource for that as well. But it's also encouraging because one of the things we're seeing now, and I'm not going to name names here, but I mean, there's certain institutions where mission alignment has not been a priority, and that has been disastrous in different ways, and corrupting of what they're actually aiming for. And I also think about this formation question. It's hard to answer because. And this was true even before this digital age we live in, is the idea that an 18-year-old is necessarily going to be ready for all this is just not true. I mean, in some cases, a 16-year-old is ready for college, and sometimes it takes them to their 24. I think there's different, and everyone's different. You know, it's just different paces. Some people really do need, it seems like they need to learn the hard way, or some people need a little more time, right? Yeah. Right. I just think about, there were some ways I was ready and some ways I was not at all. Like when I started grad school, that was certainly true. But I'm wondering then, kind of moving on to specifically the Honors College. And last time we talked, about notions of prestige and what it means to be an honors college. I'm wondering, in this episode, I'd like us to talk about what you view as success of an honors program. Like that, and this is an important question for us because someone once joked that Ciceronian Society is a walking, talking honors program. A lot of it, a lot of honors programs send their either students to us or their faculty, or they bring our people to their honors programs to give a lecture or something like that. But I'm just wondering what would you say? Like, if I call this honors program a success, it's because all our grads get jobs and make lots of money. Is it because our grads are famous? it's that, right? It's they're influencers.
They donate money. They donate back to the university.
Perfect. Yeah. Right. But I mean, yeah. How do you think of success in this context?
This is multivariate. And so as a dean, I have certain metric bean counter answers, right? If there were rankings that were legitimate of honors college, that might be one, but there aren't, believe it or not. Actually, I had this conversation with some folks We had last year, the Honors College here at Regent was named as a hidden gem by ACTA, the Association, or the American Council of Trustees and Alumni. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's a success and a feather in our cap, but when you're gunning for, you know, those kinds of accolades or rankings, then I think that you're, that's a mistake. Mm-hmm. I think that can become the tail that wags the dog.
Right.
And this is a political problem, because what is going to be coming down the line is gainful employment requirements from the Department of Education.
Yep.
And it's like the one thing that all political parties can agree on is that they have just had it with higher education, and they want to make that sector suffer. Which everybody thinks they're sticking it to somebody, and they are. So if it comes to pass that there are gainful employment requirements for getting federal student aid, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But who is going to suffer the most are the liberal arts, majors in liberal arts, certainly seminaries, mm-hmm. you know, biblical studies, theology programs are going to suffer, and anything like that where either the concrete outcomes in terms of jobs are a much longer horizon. Mm-hmm. Where take majoring in English,
right,
which is a really important major. What job counts as gainful employment there? Mm-hmm. And how soon is it okay to get that?
Yeah.
Is 10 years from now okay? Is it okay? I mean, I thought it was pretty well established, maybe even a decade ago, that most people are going to have three careers, mm-hmm. at least. Not jobs, careers, like completely different careers. So which of those is the gainfully employed one? Or is it sufficient? Or are we just talking about salary? And so if there's so we have this problem where nationally, programs want to brag about what their students are doing the second that they get out of college. And I want that too. Like, I want every student to either, you know, go to some amazing graduate school that is making them happy, that's going to project them into, you know, law and government and architecture, what all the amazing things they want to do, or I want them to make a lot of money immediately out of college. But that's just not how it works for anyone, mm-hmm. Necessarily. But what I do want that, but also I want someone in 10 years to, in 15 years and beyond, to think, I'm really glad that I have this. I'm glad that I majored in philosophy.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I majored in art. And even though I'm not a philosopher or not an artist, but it informs my work as a, you know, as a financial analyst, because it would. Yeah. So that's it's troubling. It's troubling times. But I think that how I personally measure success is in is right now personally is in the happiness of the graduates in where they are as they graduate. That's not a metric. I think for honors colleges, those success metrics are not well defined.
Yeah. It's difficult. It is both at the federal and state level, these gainful employment laws, where essentially they're tying federal aid to the success of given programs to produce gainful employment. And it's just so, I mean, the one thing that I've said this for years, is that one of the most bipartisan realities is that both parties are unbelievably stupid when it comes to education. I'm flatly okay saying that. It's hard to take them seriously. But they, you know, just think, I hadn't thought about this till just now. You know, think about a woman at Regent. I mean, most college students now are women. They're Let's say they get this great degree. They do a really good job. And guess what they want to do? They want to be a stay-at-home mom. Awesome. You're doing really, really good work. You're homeschooling your kids. But the federal government's criteria is not going to look on that positively for your program.
Right.
Right. And so it's not, just like you said, philosophy and history over time outperform many other jobs, especially nowadays, because so many of these, you know, so-called more employable jobs right out of college are, they're going to be taken by AI, or they're going to they're not going to be,
transformed, if not taken over.
Yeah. I'm very deeply skeptical of AI. I hope I'm wrong about a lot of these things, but someday we'll have our AI Catiline, where it just makes fun of everybody using it. I think that's worth exploring. What does success look like for these institutions? And also, I think there's just something to be said about, you know, part of the college experience is to learn what it means to be human, to be an adult, to be a human being in a particular place, in a particular society, country, and tradition. And gosh, you're right about changing careers. Man, I never thought I'd be directing a nonprofit. Heck, when I was in college, I went to college to be, I wanted to do musical theater. Our audience doesn't need to know
that's
all that.
Gainful employment.
Yeah, you get to talk about
I'm joking.
That, right?
I'm also the dean of the communication school. I'm joking. that is a great life. This is
if you could do it, yeah. But at the same time, I mean, the unemployment rate is quite high in musical theater. But if it's what you always wanted to do, then, exactly. So, but again, I actually would also say, to go back to that, by the way, my experience in theater and music has been incredibly helpful in every other thing I've
done. Exactly.
In terms of how I've had to read, present myself, work with people, sit on a stage, do a podcast. Right. It all goes back to that in many ways. We could talk about this forever. I'm wondering though, what are you excited about for next, the next year or so with the Honors College? You guys got is it a classical ed program bringing out?
There's a lot going on. The Honors College is, we're about to just really blow up, because what we see is the future of higher education, and our higher education is really going to be in the ultimate on campus experiences, and that is ultimately the most sustainable way forward for higher education. So we're thinking very long term here. And so one of the first things we set up in the Honors College is we have a new minor starting in the fall. We have a minor in classical Christian education, which is directed by Ciceronian Society member Dr. Joel Iliff. He's our director of classical Christian education initiatives. And this is a minor for students in the Honors College. So they have to have been through our great books, our Great Books Plus curriculum of these courses of the Good Person, the Good Person, the Great.
You should just go with that name.
The Good Person, the Great Family, the Just Society, the Exceptional Country, and the Flourishing World. There are classes in the Great Society. They are not part of the Honors College.
Yeah.
But these are just very intense Socratic seminars in the Great Books. And when the Honors College students are through that, they can also apply, if they're interested, to the next level, which has a course in classical Christian pedagogy. And then a placement at a local and regional classical Christian academy, of which there are many in the region here in coastal Virginia. So we have, we're making those connections, and that sector is really important. There's a huge appetite for classical Christian education, which you well know, and you've had several episodes of this podcast with people talking about just how to address this insatiable hunger for this. Mm-hmm. So this is our contribution to that. We have a small pilot starting this year, and that's a
big part of what's going to be moving forward. Even if it's not something they want to do forever, it's a great way to participate in the life of the mind as a young graduate of college. So we are really excited about that. We're also making some plans for careful growth over the next few years while raising the standards of the students who come in. So there's a bright future here.
Good. Speaking about the future, we'll be on campus next year in 2027, which is Regent University's 50th anniversary.
Surprise.
Surprise. What do y'all have anything planned for that occasion? Are you gonna decorate the student? I'm thinking of Disney World when they had their anniversary and they made the Cinderella castle look like a birthday cake. You should do that with whatever the student union's called. Like just maybe that.
Well, I think that'll really go well with the sort of Georgian colonial architecture that we have across just everything painted. We do a really good Christmas village around Christmas time too. So we do know how to put on a party. So there's a lot happening. I know there's a documentary in production about it, because it's a very interesting story of a very young university. 50 years is not very long.
No, not at all.
For a university. So for something to be incepted 50 years ago and grow to the size and success that it is now is pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a year of a lot of celebration, and just sort of coming out and being as public and open and engaged with the larger community as we possibly can. Part of that is the plays and the films that we put out as the cultural artifacts that we're creating. Part of that is trying to bring more really heavy hitting conferences to campus, and Cicerone is part of that for sure.
Excellent. Well, let's close then by just looking ahead to that conference. I've never been to Virginia Beach, believe it or not.
How dare you?
I know what is wrong with me. But I, you know what? Give us a sense here. How long have you lived there?
I just wrapped up my fourth year. I've been in the region for 4 years. Okay. I'm no longer the young guy.
No longer the little guy. All right. Well, in those 4 years, how would you we're going to use Bill McClay's word from the Omaha conference. How would you describe the vibe? What's the vibe we're walking into here in Virginia Beach?
My team in the Honors College is very clear about this with people that we try to hire to join. And that is that the vibes are immaculate. And you must be a part of the immaculate vibes.
What does it even mean?
It's if you don't know, then we.
I didn't apply for a job. So
Virginia Beach is a really interesting place, and I both agree and disagree with the Drake lyric that it is is pretty but rough, right? It's rough around the edges, right? There's a certain rawness to this huge, I mean, Virginia Beach and the Hampton Roads area is enormous. It is, you just cannot imagine how big it is and how much there is going on.
I want to go back to, was Drake, because I couldn't tell you a Drake song.
There's one, Virginia Beach. Yeah. Okay. He's not talking about it. The song's called Virginia Beach. It's about a breakup. Or it might have been a beef with somebody, because who doesn't he beef with? I don't know. But but there is this one clever lyric with it, she's like Virginia Beach. She's pretty but rough. And so Virginia Beach is this, it's beautiful. The ocean is gorgeous. Like my church, you can see the ocean from it. It's stunning. And the city also it's massive and it's multicultural in all the best ways that you can imagine. And so there's a lot of, it's rough around the edges. It's fun and freewheeling and rambunctious, but it's also a great place for families, right? The mayor, Mayor Bobby Dyer is actually on the faculty at Regent. He teaches in public administration, and it is a fascinating region that just surprises me all the time.
Yeah. Anything
fun
for those coming who have, you know, is there anything specific you want to recommend? Like, hey, when you come, you should maybe you should eat here or go see this particular site other than the ocean, of course.
Obviously the ocean. There are, we're going to have to curate some kind of a site or something, because it is a great cuisine town. There's a lot going on because we have everything from the city of Norfolk to Virginia Beach to Chesapeake. There's a lot of great cuisine. There's always, it's not just that there's a beach, it's that there's always something just nuts going on at the beach.
In a good way or a bad way?
No, really, in a good way. there's musical theater everywhere. There are performances on the oceanfront all the time. But if it's not that, then we were walking on the beach just this last Sunday after church, and there was a wood sports competition. Do you know what that is?
Like Scottish Highland games.
It's a lot of chopping.
Like lumberjack.
And as people were sawing and chopping, we looked up and there were people on tight ropes between two hotels. What is happening here? it could be that, but it's also, you know, opera. It's just so many different things. So
opera on a tightrope while holding a chainsaw. There we go.
Over a chainsaw. Be careful. I think that we'll be able to curate a lot of interesting suggestions for folks to have a really memorable time.
Good. Well, we are really excited to be joining you in Virginia Beach. Your support has been huge in getting us to the point that we're at. And so we're really excited to celebrate with Regent March 11th through the 13th, 2027. And for those listening, remember that proposals are due September 1. Space will be limited. I encourage you to make your room reservations as soon as possible. Simon, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. And I just can't wait to see everybody and welcome you to our campus.
Sounds good. All right. You've been listening to the SOARA, a production of the Ciceronian Society. As a reminder, we have a second podcast discussing Cicero's seminal work On Duties that is released every Wednesday morning. Be sure to take a look at that one as well. We also have the Fall Symposium, the Spring Conference, not to mention our journal Pietas, the annual Herbert Storing Prize, the new Logres Institute, and much more. Make sure to sign up for our newsletter to stay on top of everything involving the Ciceronian Society. Don't forget to rate and review this podcast. Share it with your friends. Check out our website at Ciceronian Society. And thank you for listening.